Washington Wednesdays, brought to you by Star Rentals, preferred supplier to the West's best contractors.
It is Washington Wednesday. The 4-5 Huskies going to be without head coach Jimmy Lake for this one. He's serving at least a one-game suspension. They'll also be with the new offensive coordinator, John Donovan, having been fired following that loss to Oregon. And they are going to face the Arizona State Sun Devils, or as Arizona alum Curtis says,
the Scum Devils.
That's
what's
right.
Interesting about this matchup is both schools, their fan base definitely has the pitchforks out for their head coach.
You know, it's weird. Arizona State, though, 6-3 and 4-2 in conference.
I know.
Yeah.
That is the crazy part. They've been able to keep it together. And but Herm Edwards is definitely under a ton of heat for, and quite frankly, I am shocked that he is still the head coach, that he was allowed to be the head coach entering this season with the recruiting scandal of during COVID, no one was allowed to be on campus across the board, and they were bringing people in, paying for them to come onto campus for visits. To me, I don't know how he has escaped this thus far, but it does seem that the pressure is going to get to the point where they're not going to be able to avoid this, and Herm Edwards possibly having to resign at the end of the year. But as you pointed out, Stacey, despite that, they're 6-3, and the reason why is they've got a ton of talent. If it was not for this Herm Edwards situation, we would all be looking at Arizona State as one of these programs that are on the rise and have absolutely been able to capitalize and take over and possibly put their stake into the Pac-12 hierarchy here. But that is going to be up in shambles here. But you have a quarterback in Jaden Daniels who is extremely dynamic. He's a dual-threat quarterback and is somebody that can get it done through the air and on the ground. And he's really the whole key to that offense, Stacey, in terms of their big play ability, how productive they can be on any given game. But don't overlook the fact that they have a tremendous running back in Rachaad White. He is incredible, and that has been a big staple of this Arizona offense as well, is through their running game, which, by the way, is a tremendous matchup opportunity for the University of Washington because they've been so good in their run defense.
Okay, I was going to ask about that because you look at Arizona State defensively, and are there opportunities here for Washington with an interim OC? Because I know that we're not going to see Junior Adams like drastically change the offense. Like, it's not like you can come in and make huge changes to your playbook or huge changes really to much of anything. The thing that you're being asked to do right now is like, hey, make sure nothing catches on fire. Like, just keep guys invested, try to smooth things out, try to make sure everyone knows their assignments and knows what they're doing, but you can't really drastically change anything. Are there opportunities here against Arizona State?
I mean, there's not a clear-cut weakness that you're looking at with Arizona State that is such a weakness that is going to be, hey, we've got to run the football this week. We've got to throw because this area of their defense is amongst the worst in the Pac-12. This is a solid group that has been getting it done on offense and on defense. But the area that I would say that you could lean into, if anything else, is the run game. That is something that they have been, they have given up big games before through the run game, but they don't do it often. So if you have any chance, that's what you could do. But my feeling overall with Junior Adams is what he is going to try to emphasize. He's going to try to emphasize the passing game. He's going to try to emphasize getting the ball into his playmakers' hands. That, to me, is what I ultimately see Junior Adams trying to do and kind of make a statement saying, hey, this is what we could have done all year long had I been calling plays. So Terrell Bynum, Jalen McMillan, Taj Davis, you expect to see those guys get plenty of targets and plenty of opportunities to get the football in their hands. That is what I am assuming going into this game.
Now, here's the maybe one of the bigger questions that we might get an answer this weekend about, and it's just going to be actual personnel decisions, most especially at quarterback. So Junior Adams was asked, hey, is Dylan Morris still a starter after what's been a pretty abysmal year offensively and certainly a struggle against Oregon? And he didn't commit to it. He just said, we're going to see. Do you anticipate Morris is going to be the starter at least against the Sun Devils?
I would anticipate that he would, but the thing that you can't rule out the possibility of is possibly seeing Patrick O'Brien out there. I would be shocked to see Sam Huard out there. Maybe he's playing in one of the final two games that he could play in without having to burn his red shirt. I just don't see that happening. I also don't necessarily believe it's advantageous for them to change at quarterback at this point in time. And this is a great opportunity to see if Dylan Morris can step up to this challenge. If there's a new approach, can he play better? And would it show to highlight his strengths better? I would be curious to find that out. But also, as I said before, don't rule out the idea of maybe seeing Patrick O'Brien, who came over from Colorado State, 6'5", 230 pounds, has not had the opportunity. He did not win the job. And to my understanding, is somebody that John Donovan didn't necessarily want to highlight or want to add to serious competition, but maybe Junior Adams feels differently.
Meanwhile, with men's hoops, almost every single Pac-12 school gets a win except for Cal, who lost to UC San Diego, and, of course, Washington, who lost to Northern Illinois. 71-64 was the final there. UCLA gets a win. Oregon, Washington State, Arizona State, Utah, USC, Stanford, Colorado, Oregon State, and Arizona all start the season 1-0. Washington Huskies basketball and Hopkins being once again kind of starting the season on the hot seat after last season.
Oh, no question.
Let's just talk about the state of the Huskies. We've got like a couple minutes left here. Just talk about the state of the Huskies with men's hoops and with football, given the situation both head coaches find themselves in.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good at all. But there is a ironically enough, when you mention all this, there is a lot of people that believe that the Washington basketball program is going to be significantly better this year, that they will actually have a good group and a good team.
Curtis,
don't you laugh,
Curtis,
over there.
First of all,
was my mic on?
How
man,
dare you? Okay.
Curtis isn't buying it, and obviously the results of this first game are not positive when you have those sentiments, but that is a lot of what I have heard.
Why do they think it's going to be better?
Because
the passage of time.
Because you can't be any worse than last season.
That's one way to look at it. Okay.
It's going
to
be
possibly
better.
But you also got.
I'd like to go back to talking about.
You also got transfers, but it just kind of felt like it was rearranging the deck furniture on the Titanic.
Yeah, you bring in a lot of grad transfers, and maybe you bring in people that are more willing to listen to Mike Hopkins and what he wants to do and how he wants to run his program overall. That to me has been a big reason why I think people have been super optimistic about what this season can be. But if that loss to Northern Illinois is any indication of what the year is going to be, I mean, the UW program finds themselves in a horrific situation. And quite frankly, I mean, you look at Jen Cohen as someone who everybody in this town loves. Everyone loves her.
Yeah.
And for good reason. There's a lot of things to like about Jen Cohen, but in terms of the success of the program right now in two of your biggest money-making avenues, it is not going well.
Yeah,
and
you're too big money.
You either have to A, really quickly turn things around with the new hire that you're going to make, the next hire, the next move, the next decision, or maybe everyone starts to feel differently about the athletic director and Jen Cohen and her ability to hire good candidates. And so I don't like talking about that. I don't like saying it, but it's something that is definitely out there. And I don't believe it'll come to that. I think Jen Cohen will get another opportunity, but she has to make it count.
All right, Pete Carroll's expected to speak with reporters in just a couple minutes. We'll take you to Seahawks headquarters next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
We are waiting on Pete Carroll to speak with reporters for his Wednesday press conference. He's expected to come up to the podium any minute now, and we have our eyes on it to take you to Seahawks headquarters the second he starts that press conference. In the meantime, we'll get you caught up with everything you need to know from around the NFL. And we're actually going
to
start.
How excited do you think he is to go to that podium with no information, new update on Odell Beckham Jr.?
Pete Carroll?
And to get pestered.
Oh, I'm sure he's ecstatic.
His press conference can be like 2 minutes long.
Yeah. He could use my Odell update song and be like, did you hear that? Nothing. Because there's no update. That's exactly what it is. We'll start in Seattle with this one, where running back Chris Carson, he's missed time with a neck injury on IR. Well, he's been designated to return to practice. So he'll join quarterback Russell Wilson and Dee Eskridge, who have also been designated to return to practice. The team will have, I think, 21 days, I need to double check, to make a decision whether or not to activate these players from the injured reserve. But you don't really burn that time span unless you're confident or pretty sure that guy can return. Because he has to go on season-ending IR if you don't activate him. So it is looking like at some point, certainly this weekend for Wilson, and at some point soon for Chris Carson, there's going to be a return.
Gosh, you just hope that Chris Carson comes back in this game. And that's the thing, is that him being allowed to come back to practice this Wednesday does not guarantee that he is going to be playing against Green Bay. So that is the other update that I'm going to be looking for from Pete Carroll. What is the status with Chris Carson? How does he look? How is he feeling? Is there a chance? Is there a legit chance, realistic chance, that he plays this Sunday? Because if he does, man, that helps out a lot with that running game. And Stacey, you talked about earlier wanting the Seahawks to run the football better in the second half and that being a vital aspect to this team. Mm-hmm. Well, getting Chris Carson back will surely help that and be a guy that, when things aren't perfect, can still get you positive yards, get you positive gains, and his ability to produce yards after contact should not be understated. So I just look at all of this, and it would just really help round out and balance out the offense having Chris Carson back in the lineup.
Former Seahawk Cassius Marsh was flagged for taunting, suffered a taunting penalty in Chicago's loss to Pittsburgh. A lot of people consider that a game-changing moment. Now, Chicago kind of inflicted a lot of pain on themselves. They were penalized a ton. It was something like 12 penalties. But because taunting is already a very unpopular penalty, a lot of people were complaining about it. And I think rightfully so. I complained about it. I thought it was kind of lame. He wasn't getting in the face of anyone. But according to the NFL senior VP of officiating, Perry Fuel, Cassius Marsh did kind of display taunting. So Fuel described in further detail why they decided to flag Marsh. He defended Tony Corrente's decision to flag him and said that he was penalized for taunting because Marsh took several steps toward the Pittsburgh bench, posturing towards their sideline.
I think this is the lamest, dumbest thing ever.
I don't think it makes football better. That's my problem.
It doesn't make
football better.
And honestly, there's a video of Ryan Clark on NFL Live talking about this, and I think he described it to a T in terms of what everybody doesn't get about this. What Cassius Marsh did in that moment is not egregious. There's nothing, in my opinion, that is wrong with what he did at all. It is nothing. And also, the work that all of these players put in, all the adversity that they've had to overcome in their life, the amount of hours that they spend, you know, and everything that you put your body through dreaming of that moment, being somebody like for me, for example, working and scratching and clawing and trying to fight your way onto a roster, trying to live out your dream, trying to make all these things happen, and then once you make it, trying to sustain it. And all you're doing is trying to live in that moment where you make a huge play, a huge sack, a huge tackle for loss, all these things, and you are going to celebrate that. You are going to be the energy and the emotion, the excitement, and everything that you have in that moment is to a level that most people don't understand. And to ask a player to turn that off immediately afterwards, right, I just think is completely unrealistic. Oh, you know, taunting directly at a player, standing over them, doing things that are completely unnecessary, true traditional personal fouls, I agree with. They have to, you have to try to limit those and get that out of the game.
Looking at a bench from many yards away.
Exactly. That is just fun. And that is ridiculous that is a taunting penalty. And the NFL should be ashamed of themselves for taking it this far.
from the 206, wouldn't all that work humble you so you don't need extra validation after a great play? No, I think that in that moment, football is an emotional sport that you play with a lot of emotion and a lot of adrenaline. And you have this player who was activated from the practice squad, who isn't a superstar, who sacked a future Hall of Fame quarterback on a huge play in a game where the Chicago Bears got back into it after such an ugly first half. No, there's a lot of emotion there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't blame him at all for doing it.
You're asking players to essentially be like gladiators when they step out on the field. They are putting on shoulder pads, helmets. They are strapping up and getting ready to go to play a physical, violent game and for them mentally to go to a different place. And you're asking them to turn that off on the snap on a dime just because it makes some people uncomfortable? It's ridiculous.
Someone pointing out that you always celebrate when someone says, a guest says, good question.
Yes. You want me to turn that off? You want me to stop taunting you when I do that? Sorry, it's not going to happen.
I'm not going to stop taunting you when I get a good question.
There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that go into
there's a lot.
Those good questions.
I won last week. Never
and
forget
it. And that emotion
it.
just spills out. I can't help it.
All right. Still no Pete Carroll, but he's expected to come up to the podium any minute now. We'll take you there next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Pete Carroll speaking now. We take you live to Seahawks headquarters.
So we're starting all up again and getting this thing revved up. Excited about coming off the bye, getting ready to go and get back to football. And really anxious to see our guys go out and work today and put this week together. We started on Monday with kind of a lead-in day to get us prepared for Wednesday, and that worked out fine. So this is the real important beginning of this week and really of the rest of the season. So I'm looking forward to getting off to a good start.
To see how Russ responded on Monday. What can you tell about how he bounced back from that?
I've just seen him in the walkthrough since then, and you would never have known. Yeah, you know, so I don't know what that means yet, but it was pretty good.
Is he able to do, like, the full, like, if, I know you don't have to do a practice beforehand, but would he be the full participant? Like, is he doing everything?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you think he won't have to wear anything in the hand?
He doesn't have to wear anything unless he chooses to. You know, he has been experimenting with some stuff, you know, just to see what's out there for him.
See from Chris Carson to designate him back to practice.
He's going to make it through the week of work, you know, like we always talk about, it's a one day at a time thing, and you know, he'll get banged around a little bit tomorrow, but just see how he responds to it, and it's you know, pretty important to get a good beat on this one. He'll feel good physically running around and all that because he's in great shape and he's been working really hard. So just how he responds, same old thing, and you know, how his body reacts to the workload.
You said a couple weeks ago that Chris felt good from like a mobility standpoint, but that he was struggling with discomfort and everything. Has he gotten through that now at this stage?
That's why he's back, and hopefully it'll stay that way.
Whenever he or when he does come back, well, he obviously first game he won't be given a huge load, but as he progresses into it,
you never know.
But is he going to have to be on some sort of like pitch count or play count going forward? Just because?
Gosh, I don't know that. I don't know that yet. Hey, wouldn't want anybody else to know that either.
Bobby Wagner's 7 tackles away from 100 would be 10 straight years doing that. What are you seeing at him this year, and then just the overall body of work?
You know, it's such a statement of consistency to come back, you know, physically fit enough to accomplish that. And he's a marvelous athlete. He's got a great work ethic. It takes everything connected to be able to pull that kind of, those kinds of numbers for so many years, year after year after year, and he's off to a tremendous start. I mean, this is early in the year to be that close to 100 tackles. So he's doing great, and he's feeling good, and it's just a marvelous statement about consistency, and you can see why, you know, he's heralded around here, and we love him so much, and he's, you know, been such a terrific leader and all of that.
About going to Green Bay, it's a place the team hasn't had a lot of success in the last few years. Is that anything that you address or talk about?
Yeah, you know, it looks like the visiting teams haven't done very well in this matchup in general, you know, over a long time, and so the home teams had the advantage, and somewhere that's going to change, and be nice this weekend.
You've seen a lot of good running backs over the course of the year, but how is Aaron Jones different?
Well, Aaron's got a real knack about him. He can run tough. He can get small in the hole. He can make you miss. He's really good out of the backfield. And then when he wants to take a break, here comes AJ. You know, they're loaded. And those two guys are just a fantastic duo. They're both averaging 4.5 yards a carry. They're getting the ball, you know, fairly equally. It's really, you know, why you can see why they rely on going to those guys. They're just that good, and they've really been able to have a great control of the ball offense, you know, and also have the ability to explode with Devontae out there and all the stuff that Aaron Rodgers can do. So Aaron Jones is really good. He's just really good.
What do you see now their defense, kind of the way they really played well?
They've done a really good job of staying on top and not giving up big plays and just play good, tough football up front. That's, you know, they get the football too. You know, they make, you know, create turnovers and all of that, and they're in great shape turnover wise as a team. It's obvious why they're winning, but they're just really solid across the board. Their edge players are really good. Kenny Clark's been a fantastic player inside, so that's a good group.
And Devontae, he's had some big games against you guys, and, well, everybody in the NFL, I guess. But what makes him so difficult to deal with?
He's got everything you're looking for. You know, he's got stature. He's a very competitive catcher. There's no ball he doesn't think he can catch. Great catching range, route runner. He's really good after the catch. He's excellent making guys miss and bouncing off tackles. He does not go down easy because he's such a great competitor. But the worst part of it for us is that the quarterback knows he's out there. And so they keep putting the ball to him. And he's probably averaged 15, 16 targets, you know, a game for the last 3 or 4 games he's been playing. Yeah, they're just going to go to him and use him, and they do a great job of that.
How are the conversations going with Odell Beckham?
I have no updates for you. I really got nothing to tell you.
Pete, offensively in general, feels like obviously some big injuries you guys have had to deal with, but it doesn't seem you've really found your momentum consistently. As you said, you studied kind of third down stuff over the past week. I'm just curious, offense in general, do you have a good sense of kind of where you guys are and maybe what you want to be going forward?
Yeah, we do have a good feel for, you know, where we're going, you know, what, you know, the emphasis a little redirect on some stuff that we've been working on and you know, try to make sure we bring some guys to life, you know, in the offense and all that. So maybe it'll be great to see Russ back running the show, and we'll see that, you know, that Tyler and DK and Gerald and Freddie and the guys all, you know, can do their thing. We're excited to see Chris come back, certainly. You know, I mean, if he can make it back to playing, then that would be, you know, a great asset to us. We've missed him for quite a while now. And also, D'Eskridge is coming out, you know, and he's ready to go full speed. He went Monday, and he looks good today to get going. So we'll see where we can fit him in as well. So we feel really good about all of that. We just got to get it pumping, and it comes down to the execution of I'm going to keep focusing on the third down thing so we can, you know, it's easy to pinpoint it for everybody.
Preparing for Aaron Rodgers to play on Sunday. Why is it that he does not look like he is slowing down after 16-17 years in the league. I mean, he's such an expert at
playing the quarterback position. You know, he knows it so well. He's so instinctive. He's really talented too, and he's still talented as he's ever been as far as getting the football out. He has a marvelous release time. It's as good as you could possibly be, and it's worked to his advantage for years. And he's, whether he's in the pocket or whether he's on the move, it's always, you know, just been an asset. His vision, you know, seeing guys downfield, anticipating things coming open when the play does break down, has been a famous part of his game. And he's just smarter than ever. You know, the guys just keep getting smarter. They keep getting more adept at handling situations, seeing things coming. It's really hard to fool him, you know, and all that. So he's just as talented as a guy could be playing the position.
Bridget, you described it in the past as he could practice, but then the issues would come up like the next day. Do you feel like he's past that?
Well, you know, give us another shot here. It was Monday. He had a day off, and then we're coming back Wednesday. And let's see. We'll take, like, we have to take our guys one day at a time as they come back. Rust too. That's how we're doing it. And you know, with high hopes, expectations that it's going to be okay. But we still got to wait and see.
You said he is
practicing. I'm not going to say, hey, he's gone. He's got it done.
Sure.
And then we come out of a Wednesday practice, and he doesn't feel right. So we expect him to feel good. We've cleared our guys. We expect him to do well and all that. But you know, we still got to wait.
Practicing today, though, you said.
Yes.
Right? Okay. You mentioned their edge rush, and they lost to Darius Smith early in the year to injury. Rashawn Gary's got more than 40 pressures this year, breakout season. What challenges does he present for your front
line? He's really fast. He's aggressive. He's elusive. He's long and tough. Really plays the edge, and he mixes the way he plays on the edge, so he keeps you guessing whether he's attacking or whether he's finessing. He's just a really talented football player. All the base defense, he's on the edge, and then all of their nickel situations, there he is, you know, so their sub situations. So he's just an excellent player.
There were a lot of surprising outcomes last weekend's games. It's a small sample size, obviously, but what have you noticed this year about margins between teams?
You know, I don't know if I feel that, like, it's that much different, but because the games are always so darn close and tight, and with the late, you know, dramatic finishes and all that, these seem to be characteristic of how the league goes. But it does seem like, and it has nothing to do with 17 games, because one game is one game, but it does seem that this is a long season, and maybe more than ever, I'm hopeful to call it this way, that you don't know what's going to happen. You know, and you saw a lot of teams struggle last week that haven't been, and it just, maybe that's a, you know, an omen of things to come, you know, that everybody's going to have a hard time finishing. I don't know. You know, we've got two teams that are just on fire in our division, and we'll see what happens. The injury thing is such a factor in so many cases, and you just got to see how you know, what kind of good fortune you can have and see how that factors in. I mean, look, you know, we know it. So I don't know that the margin. Do you have statistics to say the games are closer? Do we have that win margin or anything? I don't know that number.
Between what we think is good, a good team and a bad team.
Well, I mean, we've lived with that for so long, Art, that's just the way it is. It's just that game that day, you know, and who's playing for that other team and for your team. And you just got to go slug it out. That's why I know it sounds, whatever, repetitive to tell you, but every game we got to consider is like it's the only game we got. It's a championship matchup, and we got to go for it, because you don't know what you're dealing with. I've always recognized that if you are preparing with and respecting the process really well, that regardless of how the other team plays, you should play like you're capable. And that means if a team's struggling, you should beat them by a good margin. If they're really tough, you should be able to match it up, and you'd be ready for anything. And that's developing that consistency for performance is way harder than you think. It's way harder than you think because of all of the variables and all of the issues and the storylines and all of that. We have to learn to overcome that, which we've done fairly consistently over the years, and now we've got to make that work for us to make this a great finish for us.
You said you hoped that maybe the week off would be good for DK Metcalf and his foot. Any way to tell if that's maybe was good?
He's ready to go. You know, ready to practice and all that. So we're still working with him, you know, and we're going to make sure that we're taking care of him.
The Packers also have some other guys that are coming back. How much more dangerous is that wide receiver core that you guys?
Everybody's dangerous with Aaron playing, you know, because everybody can make their plays. And, you know, Cobb's an old go-to guy, and they just have a great group of guys. And the system is well-tailored for their strengths and well-tailored for the quarterback, and the play ain't ever over. You know, it starts all over again sometimes, and he's magnificent at finding guys and making the throw that's necessary. He's as creative a thrower as there is, and, you know, we talk a lot about Mahomes, and you see that. Russell's like that as well. But this guy is really as creative as you can get.
Did he miss anything, the fact that he's not practicing, or is a guy like that not even need to?
Well, I think practice is everything, you know. So when you miss it, you're not getting everything out of it. And so that's how we approach it. So, but when you've been around this long and played this much football, and he's as good as you can get, I would think it would affect him the least, you know. So I think he'll be all right.
What's the preparation like for, excuse me, just the stuff that he does at the line of scrimmage with trying to draw teams offsides and then catching them in substitutions and whatnot?
Yeah, they're doing all of that still, and he's as good as you can get at all of that. We have to be really, really disciplined with the line of scrimmage. We have to be really disciplined with substitutions for all those reasons, like it's always been. This is the way it's always been against him. And every now and then he catches somebody, you know, and So that's part of what he brings, you know, as the competitor on that side, and we have to deal with it.
Can you think of a quarterback who, in now or in years past, has done that as well as he has?
Boomer Esiason. When he was back there with Sam and Bruce Cosett were there, those guys were phenomenal at Sugar Huddlin, and they were the ones that really started this the whole thing. And not many people were around to attest to that, but that was really where the first time I've ever seen it. You know, and where they were the Sugar Huddle was invented, and the opportunity to jump when guys into the line of scrimmage when people were coming on and off and all of that stuff. And Boomer was a master at it. He was really something.
Huddle
close to the line, close to the football, so that you can get on the ball. You know, if you want to go quick.
With that anymore, that's
too much of a gap. There's too much of a gap between when it was. You know.
Pete, with all you went through to get Gerald Everett back and five consecutive tests and the day of game, and he ended up missing two games. Is it peculiar now that we're learning the protocols for an unvaccinated player? They don't have to accept it, and they can just take them.
It's frustrating. You know, it's frustrating in that one instance. I think the league took a new look at it based on what happened in our situation, and they've made it a little cleaner that you can't test back in on game day. That's what we were, you know, trying to prove, because the proof wasn't enough the day before, you know. But it's a process, you know, and everybody's figuring it out. And there's so many. We have to take that, I think, perspective so many times in our times now that we've not been here before. So we got to learn as we go and then get better as we go and really have the courage to fix things if they're not right. And that's what we're trying to get done. So, but it was frustrating then. I'm worrying about it now. But
is it fixed? The flat rule is no testing on the game then?
Yeah, you can't test back in. It's to say, like, you have to make it the day before. And that's the idea is that if you might not be in a place where you can get your test results returned to you, some teams would be and some teams wouldn't be. So they evened it up, which was a good decision.
Going back to Bobby for a second, how much is his leadership?
Wagner.
How has his leadership maybe shown up in these last few years when there's been so much transition on the defense and maybe some of the ups and downs these last couple seasons?
He's been so rock solid. I mean, he's just been Wags, you know, and B. Wags has just continued to stand for the message and for the expectations and draw guys along into it and then with him. You know, he'd been just a marvelous example of what leadership's all about. And it's like, I can't even remember him not, you know, like, I can't remember any time when he wasn't in that position. And he's a Hall of Fame player, and he's going to be there as soon as they can get him in there, and he's proven that.
Beyond some of the third down stuff, what other emphasis did you have when you were doing self-scouting your team on the bye?
We want to take advantage of our efficiency on first and second down more so, and keep moving the sticks there. You know, if you'll check, we just need to extend that so that we just keep the third downs to be shorter. You know, and which are always more makeable, and then make first downs on second down as well. You know, and so that's when we're good. That's what's looking like.
One more on Odell. You seem to express a lot of interest in him Monday. At least hint at it. What went into that?
It was just the same interest that we have in any opportunity that we get. You know, we're looking to help our team out, and that's what competing is. You know, and so like I've always said to you guys that. You know, Johnny and I have had a real clear thought about that, and whenever there's an opportunity, we're going for it, and we try to figure out everything that would make sense, if it could make sense, until it's not possible. And that's just, you're either competing or you're not. And so that doesn't change with us. It's not like we did something different here or whatever in any of these situations. We're just going for it and try to figure it out. And, you know, most of the time you make the decisions that it doesn't work or doesn't fit or whatever. But that's not, we don't want to use that as, oh, okay, we didn't try that hard this time. I mean, that's not how we do it. So just see what happens.
Have you reached the point where it's not possible?
I told you I'm not giving you any updates because I don't know anything. I just came off the practice field. Sorry. Nice try.
On the screens, both your side, executing screens on offense and defending them. Why is that not going the way he does?
We've been inconsistent defensively. We've done a lot of really, if you, again, I turn you back. There's so many numbers out there for you guys to find. But look at us on the perimeter where most of the, a lot of the stuff happens, you know. We're a good team out there. But there's been more than we like. You know, there's been the slow screens that the backs have gotten out a little bit more than we want. We just got to react to them better and do better. So we continue to work on our own screens, too, you know, in different ways that we do stuff. It has not been a big strength of ours, but yet we still, you know, we still work at it, and we're still trying to get there.
Did you learn anything new about Trey Brown when you had a chance?
Did anybody ever realize that, that you could really miss Dave being here? I mean, nobody, I know you guys never thought of that before, but what's that?
I did not think of that.
Okay, good.
Never crossed my mind.
All right, and that was head coach Pete Carroll speaking with reporters. Some new information coming from there. Chris Carson, D. Eskridge, Russell Wilson all practiced today. Russell Wilson will not be on the injury report. None of these guys have been activated from IR, but it sounds like Russell Wilson was a full participant, and he is currently not practicing with anything on the finger that he had surgically repaired. So that's the assumption heading into this game, that he won't play with anything, although he is testing out kind of different approaches. But good news, Russell Wilson, full participant, cleared to return and expected to play on Sunday. Chris Carson has a chance to play on Sunday. Pete Carroll says he's got to make it through the week without any setbacks. Also good news on D. Eskridge, who was also practicing today. And they're going to continue to see how both players feel. D. Eskridge coming back from a concussion, Carson coming back from a neck injury. But right now, while both players are, you know, the status is uncertain for this weekend, both have a chance to play this weekend. So there is a chance, Jake, in a world in which against the Green Bay Packers, the Seahawks get Carson, Eskridge, and Russell Wilson back.
Yeah, and that would be huge, right? It would be huge to be able to say that. And those guys can be a difference maker for you. As I've said before, D. Eskridge is a very talented player who I have a lot of belief in. I believe he's more of the... If I'm going to compare him to Seahawks of the past or past draft picks, I view D. Eskridge more in line with Daryl Taylor in his situation than I do with Rashad Penny or with L.J. Collier or C.J. Procise or any of those types of players. This is somebody that can have an absolute impact on this offense and somebody that, you know, given the right circumstances, can grow in within this offense. And so I don't know how they're going to start out with him, how cautious they're going to be in terms of limiting his reps and just trying to get him in his first game action. But I think that's something to keep an eye on. And then, you know, when it comes to Chris Carson, I mean, we all know the impact that Carson can have on this running game. I mean, he is a dynamic running back. He is somebody that fits exactly what this team wants to be, what Pete Carroll wants this team to be. He brings that physical edge and element that every defense that plays the Seattle Seahawks has to respect. And so it just brings out that balancing aspect to a group that's trying to figure out who they are and figure out the right amount of everything right now, to be quite honest with you, heading into the second half of the season. And so being able to be fully healthy offensively would be a tremendous blessing for this group.
Obviously, the entire league is on Odell Beckham Jr. watch, and that includes Seahawks fans, after Odell Beckham Jr. was linked to Seattle via a report from Mike Florio, who said that the former star receiver, I guess current star receiver, but certainly previously more effective receiver, had his eyes set on potentially Seattle. And not only that, but maybe signing there as a free agent. He is a free agent. He was unclaimed, went through the waiver wire. Though now, according to ESPN's Diana Russini, his list of top teams has been narrowed to three. Seattle, not one of them. Instead, it's the Chiefs, Saints, and Packers. Pete Carroll was asked whether there are any updates on OBJ and says, nope.
Yeah, no updates. And quite frankly, I don't know if there's really anything that you would want to hear from him other than maybe, you know, continuing to shower praise on OBJ if there's, you know, this recruiting pitch. But I believe at this point, it doesn't really come down to that. It would not make a difference in terms of what Odell's decision is going to be. Oh, Pete Carroll said something nice about me in the press conference. He's already done that. But I look at the situation, it really comes down to the fit. It comes down to dollars and cents. And that's hopefully where the Seahawks are talking the most in terms of the offer that they're giving to OBJ right now.
All right. And we do have an Odell Beckham Jr. update, though Curtis has barred me from using the Odell update jingle. From Jordan Schultz, the Patriots are making a, quote, strong push to sign OBJ. He says Belichick wants Beckham on the roster badly.
I mean, and that is...
Oh, but Odell could tear down the entire Patriots organization in 9 weeks. That's Watch exactly. out. Oh, no.
Curtis, just...
You have to worry about that locker room cancer.
Yeah,
you have to be very careful. I mean,
Bill Belichick, why would he ever bring in somebody like that into his organization?
Awful coach.
Because he's out of touch, Curtis. He's out of touch. Yeah, he's lost his way.
It's just, he has no way of getting through to his players.
All right.
Not at all.
Obviously, we're going to be tracking this story. We don't need to sound off on that one too much. That's
I would
the
love to hear
business.
The Seattle Seahawks be talked about in that way as of right now.
Yeah, I would love it. You'd love it. I'd
love
mean,
to hear them.
We're
going to
be getting back to it.
That way.
Let's shift gears here. ESPN's Kylie McDaniel has a list of the 100 free agents, ranks them from number one to 100, obviously. And we've got lots of questions about who the Mariners should or can target. He joins us next.